Well, it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blizzard. There's a blizzard in Louisiana.
A blizzard in Louisiana? You all, Joey told me he hasn't left his house because Louisiana's not ready or equipped for snow.
We're equipped for gumbo. We're equipped for cocktails. We are not equipped for snow. You know when they said, I'm walking to New Orleans. Yeah, well now it's snowing in New Orleans and it won't stop.
Maybe if you show it your boobs.
Roll the music, Rick. Roll the music.
You know, like Mardi Gras? Come on! Hello, dumb bitches, and welcome to...
The end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
No, no.
Come on. It's snowing in New Orleans. You posted those videos and it could have been in Wisconsin.
Oh my God, it was wild. It could have been in New Jersey.
In New Jersey. Welcome everyone to I Think Not, the podcast where we are little beach bunnies and we're not equipped for the snow. My name is Ellen Marsh and across from me, stuck in the snow of New Orleans, is old blue eyes over there, Joey Taranto. Hi, Joey.
What's up, bro?
And we are the podcast that brings you all your favorite true crime TV shows, episode by episode. By the way, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think I've made a decision on what our next show is going to be. I think I texted you about it, but I've decided and you don't have any say in the matter because I'm the woman and I have the vagina and I'm really excited about it.
Great. Listen, the clitoris rules. I think that's in the Constitution.
But that is what we do. We take all of your suggestions as to what shows you want us to cover. We cover 4 a month here on the regular feed. And then over on our Patreon, we cover longer series as well as our true crime adjacent show, which right now is Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, because that is so many crimes.
So many crimes. Against the world, actually.
Mostly against hair, because they have hombres for days.
Listen, for as little as $5, you can get 4 bonus episodes a month.
That's a lot of episodes.
But listen, if none of that is for you, that's okay. We're just glad you're here and we love you.
We sure are. There's also all kinds of tiers because we are going to be recording Swamp Talk this weekend and we do it live in front of a virtual audience and you can be there and you can listen to it and it's all tons of fun. Everything is just meant to put a smile on your face.
You know Daddy loves putting a smile on all of your faces.
Oh, come on, Joey. Not in the intro.
Such good girls.
But listen to us squawk for an hour or so, and then go back to whatever it is you people do. You all have so many jobs and so many kids.
I mean, I feel like you have so many jobs and so many kids. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my one kid feels like many. But we are here covering Killer in Plain Sight. We are on episode 3, and it is called A Friend to Die For.
Shelly Nance has seen her share of late nights. An art student by day, she spends most of her nights sketching until sunrise.
Shelly's mom, Cynthia, calls her every day to make sure she's safe. She's not.
Someone wants to make sure Shelly never sees the light of day again.
This murder has all the hallmarks of a crime of passion.
To solve the case, investigators must follow the clues to find the killer hiding in plain sight.
Well, it is September 10th, 2009, and we are in Italy, Texas? Have you heard of Italy, Texas?
I have heard of Italy, and I have heard of Texas. I never knew this place existed. I'm so excited because, you know, I kind of like have a secret affinity for like country music and all Southern things, you know, mostly your food and your manners.
Yes.
Everything else, you know, I can leave behind.
How dare you?
But I had no idea the crossover of Italian culture and like cowboy, like Texas country culture. Did you know this was a thing?
No. Does that exist?
Yeah. I had to Google it, but like, it's a thing. And I found a song. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, play it for me. I'm ready.
Well, life in Italia is full of meatball, of my meatball. It's big, it's not small. Full of bologna and a man named Tony. Thank God I'm Italian girl. Well, Texas has an Italy, Florida too.
South Carolina, but I don't look like a shoe. Italy, New York is a cute little pearl. Thank God I'm Italian girl. Well, I got me some pesto, I got me pasta. You need a ride, I got me a Vespa. Crossing me, I'm say what time out of you. Thank God I'm Italian girl. Yeehaw! Mortadella! Cazzarella! Other Italian words? Just stick your fingers together and talk like this. Woo!
I'm literally crying. I just imagine your nonna being like, I'm an Italian girl. We love a Texas. We love a cowboys.
You cross me, I'ma say, what's the matter, you?
Oh, anyway, that's good.
Well, I had no idea that my truest dream was an Italy country crossover. You are fucking welcome, podcast world.
All I have to say to you is grazie. So it's September 10th, like I said, 2009, and we hear about Samuel and Cynthia Nance, who are about to drive 1,400 miles from Italy, Texas, to Yellowstone National Park. Now, I looked that up, and that's about a 21-hour drive. There's some things that I would rather do than be in a car for 21 hours. May I share them?
Please.
I would rather visit a tiger cage with catnip on my nutsack than drive in a car for 21 hours.
Next.
I would rather have a one-man potato sack race through a minefield than have a car ride for 21 hours.
Next.
Finally, I would rather make out with Boris Johnson's toes be in a car for 21 hours.
Could you imagine somebody listening to us for an entire road trip to Yellowstone? If you have listened to us during an entire whole ass road trip that was over, say, 12 hours, please get in touch with us because you may be entitled to compensation.
Yeah, our BetterHelp promo code is still active.
Nobody should have to do that or experience or go through that.
Cynthia chats with her daughter, Shelley, every single day. But this morning, there's no response.
Shelley is a second-year student at the Art Institute of Dallas, and her parents know she has no classes that day.
I feel like Mama Cynthia is the kind of mom I will be when Lola leaves the house, but that's not the kind of daughter that I am, so what am I saying? I'm saying I'm a hypocrite.
Great.
Because my mom drives me crazy when she always wants me to call. But, like, I feel like if Lola was me, I would hate me. I didn't think this part of the story through. Keep going.
I think that EMT class you've taken is wonderful. That EMFR. The TMZD.
What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
that good therapy you're in.
EMDR?
Yes, exactly what I said. That TMJ is wonderful.
There is this meme that said, like, I'm in EMDR. And, like, someone said, like, they awkwardly, like, put away their glow sticks or something. Like, they were like, yeah, it's therapy. And then the person was like, okay, I guess I'll just put away these glow sticks. People are so funny on the internet. And scary. Anyway.
So at the end of the first day of driving, the Nances are at a motel, and they still don't hear from their daughter, Shelley. Well, the next morning, they're back out on the road, still haven't heard from Shelley. So Mama Cynthia is like, fuck this. I'm calling the school administrator to see if she made it to her morning class.
I don't know. Anybody listening from Emerson, I don't remember them ever taking attendance in college, but who knows where all that money went. I don't even think my mom knew what classes I was taking in college. My mom's like, are you gonna graduate? Cool. Mama Cynthia is on the ball, and thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, the school says, we'll call you back. And they're like, okay, cool. And when they do call back, they say, hey, don't worry. We heard from Shelley's roommate, Ashley Overa, and she says she was with her last night and she's okay.
So then Mama Cynthia is like, okay, she's got these panicked feelings. Maybe there's nothing to worry about. Maybe, like, she's just having an irresponsible moment, which wasn't really like Shelley, but, right, you know, she's at college. Maybe she's tired or something.
That afternoon, when the Nances are 200 miles from Yellowstone, they get a very different call from the school.
They're riding through the mountains, so the connection is choppy. They can only hear bits and pieces.
I was in Yellowstone last year with a bunch of podcast friends having a grand old time. And so when they said that the service was a little choppy, I was like, a little choppy? We were going into, like, gift stores and, like, begging for the Wi-Fi password.
Yeah.
It is so bad there. And also, if you are on the other end of the phone with me and you have, like, a signal issue or it's breaking up and it's like, hey,
I'm hanging up on you. I'm not taking a choppy call. I'm not working through a choppy call. I'm done. I'm hanging up. You call me when you get your shit together.
It's sort of like rewriting the McDonald's theme song, except it's like the phone cell service is like, misophonia. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Something like that.
I can't handle it. The minute someone breaks up, I'm like, oh, the call dropped. No, it didn't. I hung up on you. I absolutely hung up on you.
So here's the thing. This was the worst time for her to have bad cell service.
Mama Cynthia gets another call. Still really choppy, still really bad service. But she hears this one part of the conversation crystal clear.
Your daughter has been found in blood. And then the line cuts out.
Are you people? Sometimes I watch these shows and I am befuckled.
Mm-hmm.
Who says that? Can we round our edges, please? And I have to tell you, that's not a change or any kind of artistic liberty, because I found some interviews with Mama Cynthia. That's exactly what they said.
Which is horrifying. And the only thing worse than that is that the call cut out after they said that.
Yep.
So what happened is apparently Shelly's roommate Ashley found Shelly dead in her bed. Mm-hmm. Even though the school said Ashley told them that they were together. Are you confused? Because I was. Put a pin in that.
And you all know I hate horror movies. And this show, the props master really has a hankering for horror movies in this episode. Just be warned if you watch it. You can say that this poor girl was covered in blood. I don't need you to act it out. I am good.
Yeah.
I know some of you all are horror junkies, and that's fine. Live your life. But I was like, I don't need all that. Sorry.
Yeah, it was a lot. Well, yeah. Here's what happened. Apparently, immediately after Ashley found Shelly, she called the police, and the police arrive at their apartment complex, which is called The Falls. A lot of students live there, and the neighborhood is known for getting sort of sketchy at night. So detectives enter Shelly's bedroom, where she is quickly and sadly pronounced dead.
Mm-hmm.
This poor girl, 20 years old, had been stabbed over 40 times in her neck and her back. And what is even more puzzling to investigators is that there is no sign of a struggle. Mm-hmm. She had no defensive wounds. They realize whoever did this ambushed her while she was sleeping. And they refer to it as a crime of passion, which we hate that term. But it was extremely violent.
I want a different name for it. I hate it. You all know I hate it.
Yeah.
We can move on. So now we get a little backstory of Shelly. We learned that she was an amazing and very accomplished artist. Not in the episode. Her specialty was anime. And I really want to post some of her artwork because I was looking at it online and it's really special. It was like all very whimsical and she loved things with wings and long flowy hair. It was really beautiful. So
in high school, she entered a contest sponsored by the Dallas Art Institute where she placed fourth nationally. She won a $13,000 college scholarship.
What kind of contest wins you $13,000 for fourth place? Not that fourth place nationally isn't amazing.
Yeah.
But as I was researching the episode, she actually won first place in Texas. And that's what won her the $13,000. And then she placed fourth nationally.
I mean, what an accomplishment.
Right? To win out of the state of Texas and then $13,000, that's amazing to go to college. There is such a lack of funding for the arts, and it's just like an incredible opportunity for a young artist to have. And then fourth nationally, that's just huge. But it was like a little confusing. I was like, what did first get?
Yeah, exactly. What did first get? So when Shelly got to college, she blossomed there. She was having a great time. She found an apartment with her roommate, Ashley. She had friends. She was dating. She's loving college. Things were going really well for her. And so this murder really just was, it's so horrible. She had her whole life ahead of her, and everyone who knew her is totally confused. Here's the thing. The coroner determined that when roommate Ashley found Shelly dead on that Friday afternoon, Shelly had been deceased for over 24 hours. And when they take a look at her computer, it shows that Shelly had been using it from Wednesday evening until about 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
That sounds like you during the pandemic.
It sure did. That is exactly me.
You would be up to all hours. I would like call you at 2 and you're like still sleeping. I'm like, what are you? What's happening over there?
Yeah, well, when you mix depression, alcohol, and Dead by Daylight together, it is a recipe for late sleeping.
Well, they continue to investigate this crime. And, you know, it's very interesting. I kind of did a deep dive on this because I had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
They don't
give us the name of the investigator. Everybody involved are just FBI weighing in. But the investigator's name was Paul Elzey.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk at the end of the episode. This guy was quite the character.
Got it.
Yeah. But something that they noticed, which is very actually important, is that she was wearing all of her clothes. She was in, like, you know, a t-shirt and underwear. She was in what someone would go to sleep in.
Yeah.
And there was no sexual assault and there was no theft. But there is one small clue that helps them. Underneath her left wrist was something that resembled latex. And so they definitely think that's suspicious and curious because nothing in the room matched that material.
Yeah, everything was surprisingly in place, except for that piece of blue latex.
There's no sign of any murder weapon, but two kitchen knives are missing. Investigators noticed blood spots on the bathroom sink and cabinet, which could mean that the killer washed themselves up after the murder.
So at this point, they're like, we gotta start asking some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the first person they need to speak with is the last person to see Shelley, roommate Ashley.
And the information that a lot of people give doesn't really line up with the evidence. It's not just one person either. It's a couple people that seem to be either misremembering or lying just a little bit.
Yeah.
So first of all, there is absolutely no sign of forced entry. So whoever did this had some sort of access to Ashley and Shelley's apartment. So Ashley's story changes a little bit. So in her first story, she said that she saw Shelley at home at their apartment that Thursday night. And then the second time she tells the story, she says that she was leaving for school on Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, and that was the last time she saw Shelley. Now, I can totally be on board with, like, not remembering a day of the week. I never really know what day of the week it is. I mean, don't have, like, a bank holiday. I'm going to think it's, you know, Tuesday all week long. I always think, you know, whatever. But, like, don't you think the time of day, saying I saw her at night, no, I saw her in the morning, that is the most suspicious part of that, don't you think?
Listen, I'll tell you this. When people are in shock or grief-stricken, they can say all kinds of wild things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? These are young people. What I'm going to say is you picked the wrong time to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this doesn't paint you in a good light. So to say, like, oh, we were together Thursday night. Wait a minute. Sorry. The last time I saw her was Wednesday morning when I was leaving for school. And when I came home that afternoon, her door was closed. I knew she was in there. I didn't see her.
Which actually isn't that suspicious. Like, have you ever lived with, like, roommates that were just roommates? Like,
yes.
You lived together fine. You coexisted fine, but you didn't really talk or hang out or anything.
Well,
like, you just kind of, like, coexisted.
Yeah. And also there's times too when maybe you have things you want to do on your own time in your room.
What? What?
Pray to the Lord.
Oh, praying? What else?
Yes. You know, we are in Texas. I know that there's no beach nearby, but you never know when you'll be called by the Lord to boogie ball. Come on, back to the beginning. I'm just saying, you could hold a one-man prayer meeting. You could call the Four Corners.
Mm-hmm.
You could pop your pimples.
There's a lot of secret single behavior.
Or you could be blowing your boyfriend.
Do you remember what Carrie's secret single behavior was?
I take saltines. I plus stack them. I put grape jelly on them. And what was the other one?
She reads fashion magazines,
yes,
in her kitchen. What's your secret behavior that you do when nobody's looking?
My secret? I shove a dildo up my ass and sing Ave Maria. I don't know.
Okay, no. You know what? All right.
It's just not so secret. I play Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
What's yours?
Scroll TikTok.
TikTok has rotted our brains.
Rotted. I mean, and then with time blindness, forget it. I could be up till 6 o'clock in the morning if somebody let me. And by let me, I mean myself, because I have no self-control.
The police know that Shelley was stabbed at some point Thursday morning. That would mean that Ashley spent the evening at home with Shelley's dead body in the next room. And yet she noticed nothing out of the ordinary.
So Shelley was already dead when school officials asked Ashley about her roommate Friday morning.
So they were like, okay, let me get this straight. Shelley was deceased in her room. You were there the whole time. You didn't hear a peep coming out of her room. She didn't go to the bathroom. The toilet didn't flush. And you didn't think it was weird. Again, there are other things that Ashley does that I think that are weird. But there are roommates who live like that. Like, they did share a bathroom. But I've actually been in my own house and been like, oh, did you come home? To my roommate, she doesn't pay rent. But, like, it happens.
Oh, absolutely. When Sam and I lived together, I would sometimes go in the front room, put my headphones in, and I wouldn't know who was coming or going. So, yes, it makes sense. And the other thing is that when they looked at Shelly's computer, they could see that she had been using her computer from early Wednesday evening until 6 a.m. So she went to sleep. So they know that Wednesday night, Shelly was home.
Right. So something else that was even more curious, which I think they should focus on more. They were like, hey, girl, you went to the bathroom within that 24 hours, right? Didn't you see the blood on the sink? And then this is what they say.
Ashley said she saw the blood on the sink in the morning, but thought nothing of it.
Exactly. That is a weird thing to overlook.
Like, I could imagine being like, she left the curling iron on. I could even make peace with her finding, like, a banana peel. Being like, what's that doing there? But, like, you mean to tell me you saw blood and you were like, whatever. She probably had her period in the sink. And then you... like, nothing sounded alarm bells. That, for me, was weirder than the not knowing she was there narrative they were trying to push.
I agree. So that means that on Friday morning, when the school asked Ashley if she had seen Shelly, Shelly was already dead. And Ashley told them she had been with Shelly Thursday night. Ashley's like, look, I came home that Friday afternoon, and that's when I let myself into Shelly's room to find her dead. Obviously, detectives are like, we could drive a truck through the holes in that story. We don't like your tale. We don't like your lies. We don't like your art, by the way. And we don't like you.
I don't know. Yes, it all doesn't make sense. Like, I'm never going to not think anything of blood anywhere. Even before I was in true crime, I'm terrified of everything. I think every trunk has a dead body in it. If I see blood, I'm going to think so many things of it.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't think too much of it? Imagine if the parents in the movie The Poltergeist were like, oh, yeah, the chair started moving on their own. The lights were going on and off by themselves. We could slide objects across the kitchen floor, including our daughter, without lifting a finger. Little Carol Ann got swallowed by the closet. Robbie got choked out by a stuffed clown. We had to throw tennis balls into the mouth of heaven, and they came out the ass of heaven. Our house was built on top of an old cemetery, and then Jesus swallowed our house whole, and it vanished. But you know what? We didn't think much of it. That doesn't sound quite right, does it, Ashley?
Ashley's listening to this podcast. She's like, he has a point. He does have a point.
Anyway, so then Ashley is like, listen, I am not trying to divert attention here, but have y'all talked to Nathan Shuck? And they're like, who the fuck is Nathan Shuck? And she's like, that's the guy Shelly's been dating for 2 months.
Mm-hmm. So we get the backstory on Nathan. He's 20 years old, also an art student, just like Shelly. And they had been dating for about 2 months. Not in the episode. They had known each other the whole time they were in college, but they had just been dating for 2 months.
Shelly hasn't introduced Nathan to her parents because she doesn't think her father would approve. When investigators asked Shelly's mother, Cynthia, about the boyfriend, she says Shelly was thinking of breaking up with Nathan because she didn't think the relationship was going anywhere.
Mama Cynthia is here. She's at DBU. She was like, hear ye, hear ye. Gather around for I have news. Let me tell you, Shelly was thinking of breaking up with Nathan because she didn't think the relationship was going anywhere. I was like, marriage? Like, what? what are you talking about?
I mean, she probably was like, I like to draw anime. He's into Looney Tunes. Enough said. You know what I mean?
Like, maybe.
Who knows? But when you're 20 years old, you're not thinking about anything serious. I mean, at least I wasn't.
I still don't.
But Ashley's like, here's something you should know about Nathan is that man blows up. He's got a temper. I've seen it. So, of course, they bring Nathan in.
Well, also, did you notice reenactment, Ashley?
No.
So while they're explaining that Nathan has this really bad temper, reenactment Ashley is sitting on, like, the futon watching this...
ping pong.
Couple fight back and forth like it's theater. Like, I highly doubt any couple would just fight in front of the roommate and reenactment. Roommate Nashie was like, go on. Oh, no, you didn't. What? You said that. Like, that did not happen.
I would never argue in front of someone with my partner.
I would never. I don't think I ever have. Like, I don't think I've ever argued in public. But, oh, my God, I love it when people argue in public. I'm always like, oh, God, what's happening? And then they leave mid-fight. And I'm like, can you guys text me? I just want to know how this all resolves. I'm invested.
Well, Nathan says, look, I'm absolutely devastated over this loss. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even around when this happened. I was with my family, spending time with my mom and my grandmother this past week. Now, immediately, police are like, oh, interesting story. Nice tank top. No. You're like, you're showing a lot of cleavage there. You look like Joey in 2004 with flat iron hair going to the Lower East Side to dance with other homosexuals. You look like the Nightmare Before Christmas.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm nodding along because that flat iron, that whole flat iron era, it wasn't your best.
It's a crime against humanity. But the point in why this is relevant is because his tank top was low and they're like, you've got scratches on his chest and on his back. And they were like, how do you explain that? And Nathan's like, I mean, I do be scratching myself at night when I sleep. And they're like, interesting. Do you do a go-go gadget arm to reach your back or are you just super flexible there?
Do you know what they edited out? Because like they have an interrogation video online.
I seen it.
Did you see the part where he was like, so you have scratches on your neck? And Nathan was like, yes. And he was like, and your back? And Nathan was like, yes. And then that one fucking guy who thought he was like a comedian was like, what about your pussy and your crack? Did you see that part? Did you?
I did not, my love.
Okay. Well, you need to pay for YouTube Premium. That's okay. It's on there. So.
Deep cuts. Basically, Nathan goes on to say, look,
they spend most of the time playing video games in her room and they haven't even shared a kiss yet. When police tell Nathan that Cynthia says her daughter was about to break up with him, Nathan gets angry and says they're lying to him.
I have a whole bunch of information at the end of the episode about this. It's a lot.
Of course, they're like, if you can't control your temper in front of the cops who are questioning you about a murder, imagine how out of control he is in his everyday life, in the privacy of his own home. But Nathan is like, you guys are lying. She was not about to break up with me and she wouldn't. And they're like, okay, bro.
Yeah. You sure? You sure about that? You sure? So the police ask Nathan if they can search his apartment. And Nathan agrees. And they're like, well, you should have thought twice before that because we found some shit. So in Nathan's room, they find what they tell us are martial arts weapons. What are martial arts weapons? Great question. I would love to tell you.
Throwing stars, knives, and swords.
Throwing stars are a real thing. I genuinely thought that was like lore.
Me too.
Where do you get those?
I have no idea, but I can imagine that they were most likely imported illegally.
That's on Amazon. Where you get that?
So I just Googled to see if throwing stars are legal in America, and it's state by state.
Well, are they legal in Texas?
It didn't say Texas. Throwing stars are like ferrets. They're not legal everywhere in America. You know what I'm saying?
It's like sodomy.
Yeah. You're not wrong. So here's the thing. This man
stars?
I know. It's so random. And what doesn't help this man is that he had a fucking ninja costume. And he would wear it online. And this is on his MySpace, y'all. It's 2009. And he had a picture that was captioned as Ninja Evil Me.
Okay. So also not in the episode, they were big anime fans. They were big, like, Comic-Con nerds.
Yeah.
Like, I can say nerd because, like, I'm a nerd. I'm, like, a theater nerd. So it's really not that crazy. It's crazy when you think of it, when you're like throwing stars, but then you learn that they're like kind of like anime Dungeons and Dragons, kind of like, you know, that section of nerd. There's very different sections of nerddom.
Oh, listen, let me tell you something. I put it in terms of gay, right? There are things that are completely normal, acceptable in the gay community, especially for gay men, that outside of that community would be like, you do what? That's a what? I'd be like, yeah. I understand why this might be far-fetched for you. You know what I mean?
Can you give me an example?
I mean, poppers alone are like,
it's poppers on the dance floor.
You guys, there was this part in our live show where I don't remember what we said about poppers, but then Joey would go to the draggiest of drag-alongs and be like,
man,
do you know what a popper is? And he would explain it. And then one time he asked this person, and he goes, I'm 17. And Joey was like, great, thanks very much. Talk to you later.
Could not move on fast enough. But I mean, I understand, like, people who are into anime and like to dress up, I love that stuff. I actually get it on my FYP. I love the commitment. I love anybody who commits to the bit. And also,
totally,
there is such an artistry to it.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that probably cops who are like investigating a murder are not going to understand that.
Totally. And we can sit here and defend this whole ninja costumes and the weird ass throwing stars all we want. But the fact of the matter is, they look in Nathan's bathroom and they find a bag, like a little Ziploc bag with blood in it and some hair. And Nathan's like, I don't know what that is. And he insists that law enforcement planted it in his room. He calls his lawyer and refuses to speak to them any further. You know, we always say, it doesn't matter. That is your right. And that was probably the smartest thing he did, because he is in a full-on panic now.
Well, while all of this is happening, police also chatted with Nathan's roommate, a guy named Daniel William. And they find out that both Daniel and Nathan are good friends with Shelly's roommate, Ashley.
At 26, Daniel William was older than most of the other art students. Born in Indonesia, he served in the U.S. Navy as a pastry chef.
What? We have folks in the armed services whose jobs are to make eclairs. Yeah. Code red, we have a cream puff shortage in the barracks. Call the pastry chef, drop and give me 20 macaroons. Like, what? I don't understand.
Drop and give me 20 macaroons. You know what's better than a cream puff?
What?
Cream pie me, baby. Cream pie me, baby. Uh-huh. Honey. Okay, that's a deep cut. Yeah, I had no idea. I had a friend that I worked at Busch Gardens with, and after our summer at Busch Gardens, he went to be a singer for the Navy. Like, he was, like, represented the Navy, like, you know, in front of, like, the band and everything.
It's amazing.
But that was his service, was being a singer.
Well, y'all, Daniel's service was E-class. God bless America. And eventually, Daniel landed at the Art Institute in Dallas to study interactive media.
Now, we learned that Nathan and Daniel lived together, and Daniel served as sort of an older brother figure. He would help him with his homework. He would cook for him. He would even give him rides all the time because Nathan didn't have a car and he didn't know how to drive. I was like, how can I get a roommate like that? Someone I don't have to have sex with, that cooks for me, does my laundry, reminds me to wake up in the morning? Are you kidding me?
Wait, they said that on the episode that Nathan didn't know how to drive?
That was in my research. I really went deep on this episode. I don't know why. He didn't know how to drive, and Daniel was like, I'll take you wherever you need to go. He literally, like, woke him up every day for school.
All of that is wild, but put a pin in that because there's a twister coming, and I called it in this moment. So,
a twister?
A twister. So now we hit September 17th, 2009. It's been a week since Shelly's murder, and her family is laying her to rest. Now, boyfriend Nathan, who is a suspect in this case, and the Nances know that, he attends the funeral, and he approaches Shelly's parents to offer his condolences. And they're like, get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. We have nothing to say to you, and we're not shaking your hand. Bye-bye.
I don't blame them.
No.
They're like, my daughter was going to break up with you. We have nothing to discuss here. You are a suspect. Why? I completely support them. At this point, we don't know if Nathan is innocent or guilty, but, like, yeah, that family is well within their right to grieve however they choose.
So at this point, the police are looking into boyfriend Nathan, his roommate Daniel, and Shelly's roommate Ashley. And speaking of Ashley, her story keeps changing. They should call her the never-ending story.
Ashley Olvera's story keeps changing, and she may have been the last one to see Shelly alive. Art school boyfriend Nathan Shuck has a weapons collection and a nasty temper. And his older roommate, Daniel William, is a close friend of Ashley, and he has a story of his own.
All of these people are sus. I'm kind of like, you know what, lock them all up. I don't know. Y'all involved somehow.
But the question is one person involved? Are all of them involved? But the even bigger question is, why would anyone want Shelly Nance dead?
Yeah, what is the motive?
And that is a question that will be answered soon enough.
Mm-hmm. So remember that bloody bag that they found in the bathroom? Well, they ran the DNA and the blood comes back to match Shelly Nance. And so then they're like, okay, well, only Nathan and Daniel live here, so these are our suspects. And then they talk to Daniel. And even though Daniel sort of served as like a big brother figure, he was like, listen, Nathan is weird. He is fucking weird. He's got problems. He's super obsessed with Shelly. He's like always keeping tabs on her. Wherever she went, he knew. He even used the word stalked. And the cops are like, wait. You're saying he like stalked her? Like, and he's like, yeah, that guy is messed up.
Well, the day of the murder, Daniel says he picked Nathan up from school and immediately was like, whoa, the vibes are off. What's going on? This man is in a mood. And later that night, Daniel says he heard Nathan crying in his bedroom. Mm-hmm. Now, Nathan can prove that he was at his parents' house that Wednesday evening and his mother drove him to school Thursday morning. Students also confirmed seeing Nathan in the computer lab Thursday morning studying. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then Nathan comes in here. So Daniel has his story, right? But Nathan pops in to say, actually, listen, I have my alibi. I can prove that I was at school. I can prove that I was at my parents' house. But also something you need to know. And I saw this coming a mile away. He says, y'all know my roommate, Daniel, the one who's always cooking and cleaning for me, driving me to and from school, helping me with my homework.
Waking me up in the morning.
Yeah, my man is a lavender menace.
A what?
A tamer of the one-eyed snake.
A what?
A high-ranking member of the alphabet mafia.
A what?
A repeat offender of butthole crimes.
A what?
Someone who is not listed on IMDb but was in A Few Good Men.
A what?
An eager knob slobber.
A what?
A back alley plumber.
What are you talking about?
A brownie queen.
A brownie queen?
A pitcher but batting for the other team.
I am lost.
He's gay! Ah! He is gay!
You know what, Dad? You know what? Peter's gay. Gay!
Okay.
Yeah, Daniel was openly gay, and according to Nathan, he'd become increasingly controlling. When they said, oh no, he's like a big brother type, I'm like, he ain't. He wants to be your husband. That's why he's cooking and cleaning and mopping the floors and waking you up and taking you to school is because he wants to take a ride in your cucumber patch.
Okay, I'll allow it. So here's the takeaway. They were like, okay, so maybe Nathan having this girlfriend, spending more time away from him, like he was out of the house more, he wasn't around. And so maybe we have a little like jealousy thing here going on. So they go back to Mama Cynthia and they're like, hey, some more questions. I know this might be a little far-fetched, but do you know your daughter's boyfriend's roommate, Daniel? And Mama Cynthia was really involved in her life. So, you know, for an average mom, that probably like wouldn't set off any alarms.
Cynthia says Daniel called and texted Shelly repeatedly after she started dating Nathan.
Daniel even corners Shelly at school. He is insulted that the new couple aren't inviting him on their dates. He feels like he's being ditched.
Earth would want to be the third wheel on a date. Like, come with us, they said. It would be fun, they said. Cut to me riding every ride at Six Flags all by myself. Third wheeling is never fun. Poor Harry Potter.
Well, to make things worse, anytime Shelly comes over to Nathan's place, Daniel just stares at them, like death stares at them. It was really fucking weird and awkward. So Shelly is like, maybe we hang at my house? Nathan agrees. He's like, yeah, I think that's the move.
No, it should be said, they were a very innocent couple. But when someone is staring at you, it's like, you know, when your cats and your dogs are, you know, watching you
do the deed.
Field test the furniture.
Yes.
You know, giving those box springs a run for their money. You know, the cats are like,
yeah, I don't like it. I kick them out.
It's super awkward. They were like playing video games and Daniel would like sit in the door and be like, hey.
Yeah.
Get out of here. You're being super weird.
So Armed with this information, investigators have to find out where Daniel was the morning of Shelley's murder. And he says, well, I started my day at the coffee shop. And
this is so random. He went to Starbucks, but like they can't say Starbucks. I envisioned him at this cute little collegiate coffee shop or sure. something. They just can't say Starbucks.
No. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, he was at the Starbucks, and he says, I texted Ashley, which is Shelley's roommate, about grabbing lunch later. From there, I drove off to this area called the White Rock Lake to snap some pictures for a school project. When he got there, he said he realized he forgot his camera, so he had to head to a friend's house.
Which, there's two sides to that. Number one, how could you leave your camera if you have a photography project?
Uh-huh.
But I honestly can't get mad at him because that is...
Something I would do.
But mm-hmm. I'm not on a true crime documentary, so... no photographer. It's like a makeup artist forgetting their, like, makeup kit. Like, you can't photograph mm-hmm. without a camera.
Did you say photograph?
Yeah, is that a word? You can't, yes. You can't photog with the camera.
I'm with the press. Yes, this badge. I'm here to photog. I'm a photogger. I'm photogging.
I mean, that just does not line up.
An interview with Ashley presents another version of his story.
Ashley says she got a stream of texts from William that morning.
Between 10:30 a.m. and 10:37 a.m., Daniel sent Ashley 13 texts.
Okay, first of all, they told us that it was 13 texts before they gave us the time frame. And Ashley was like, he texted me 13 times. I was like, I text you 13 times asking you the same question in a different way. And then they were like, within 7 minutes, I was like, I retract my statement.
That's a lot. Yeah. Well, then after that, the text just stopped. For like 90 minutes. And so investigators are thinking Daniel was not trying to ask her to lunch. What if he was trying to figure out when Ashley would be home and when she wouldn't be home?
Mm-hmm. So then they're like, okay, again, whoever did this had to have access to the apartment. And Ashley, whose story keeps changing, Overa, actually comes in clutch with some information. She was like, you know what? I loaned Daniel my car like a month prior to this murder. He probably needed to take the car in for maintenance because he's been driving roommate Nathan everywhere and he's really putting too many miles on the car. But when Ashley let Daniel borrow her car, she gave him her set of keys, all the keys, including the keys to the apartment. So did Daniel make a copy of the apartment key?
Now, they don't have proof of that, but the detectives are like, all signs point to Daniel. We have the motive. He had the means, the time. He very well could have murdered Shelley. And so they come up with a theory of what they believed happened. So Shelley is up all Wednesday night working on some sketches, right? She goes to bed around 6 a.m. Her roommate Ashley leaves at 9 a.m. to go to school.
And then they give us this piece of information.
A short time later, video surveillance shows William at Walmart purchasing blue latex gloves, which are consistent with what was found next to Shelley's body.
What did I say?
Always a Walmart.
Always Walmart. So remember, going back to the crime scene, remember they said they found a little piece of latex? Well, that glove was consistent with the latex gloves that Daniel bought. And this was also coincided with the time he was text bombing Ashley, trying to sort out her schedule to see what time she was going to be home from school. And so then once he gets that confirmation, she's like, dude, I'm not going to be home till like after lunch. Why are you bothering me? That's when he headed over to the Falls apartment buildings.
And stops texting Ashley. So once there, Daniel gets into the apartment, potentially with a copy of Ashley's apartment key, finds Shelley asleep in her room and ambushes her, stabbing her over and over. And after he murders her, he cleans up in their bathroom and he just leaves. Mm-hmm. And what they believe is if Daniel did drive out to White Rock Lake, it wasn't to take pictures. It was to dump the murder weapon and any other evidence.
And this, I just looked up how far that lake was from the Dallas Institute of Art, and it's only 4.5 miles. So it's like 15 minutes away. So all of that stuff could have been done within that time frame before Ashley got home or whatever. I mean, it all could have been done very fast. So then they're thinking, if this was all done in the name of jealousy, then he would have a very solid reason to plant that baggie with the blood and the hair in the bathroom to essentially frame Nathan.
Yep. So 8 weeks after Shelley's murder, on November 4th, 2009, police arrested Daniel William for first-degree murder. And sadly, what the prosecution does not have is any DNA evidence linking him to the murder. And Daniel's attorneys, they're just going to point the finger very hard at Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
So the prosecution has to find a way to prove that Nathan is innocent, because with that bloody plastic bag they found in their bathroom mm-hmm. that they share, the murderer can only be Nathan or Daniel.
Yeah.
Prove Nathan's innocence, you prove that Daniel is guilty.
They show us Daniel's booking photo. This man must have had a hard 26 years.
I said the same thing. He looks 40.
If this man is 26, I was born during the Clinton administration. This man looks older than sand, okay? Like, you are giving vintage, sir.
No, this man just got his first AARP card, okay?
Yeah, he has had so many trips around the sun, and you look like you've been in the sun too long. You are not 26!
No, this man looks like his idea of a nice dessert is pudding.
If this man was from Indonesia, he lived there when they still called it the Dutch East Indies. Okay? This man is not 26.
It is wild. It is wild. He does not look 26. Or by this point, he's 28. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
In November of 2011, William stands trial for Shelley Nance's first-degree murder.
Anticipating William's defense, the prosecutors picked through Nathan's life to preemptively prove that he couldn't have done it.
And like Joey said, basically the prosecution's whole case is it wasn't Nathan.
Yeah.
So it's got to be this guy. There was no DNA in the apartment, y'all. There was no DNA that matched Nathan or Daniel or any suspicious male profile for that matter. And so basically their only hope is to prove that it's not Nathan, so it has to be Daniel.
Well, Nathan takes the stand, and the prosecution is able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Nathan was at school at the time of the murder, and that mm-hmm. he did sleep at his parents' house the night before. His mother brought him to school that Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. So the only other person it could be is Daniel. And the prosecution says Daniel could not manage his jealousy. Jealousy was the motive. He was jealous of Shelley, and he was enraged with Nathan. But Daniel does not take the stand.
Right. And the defense's star witness was, wait for it, Mama Cynthia.
Yep.
And the defense is so thin. I mean, to be honest, so is the prosecution. But basically, her only defense was saying that Shelley was planning on breaking up with Nathan because they were trying to, you know, put the attention away from Daniel. And that's what they were trying to go on. Well, whatever. The jury deliberates for 3 hours and they come back with a guilty verdict for Daniel William. And he got life with the possibility of parole after 30 years.
After the verdict is announced, Cynthia tracks down Nathan Shuck and apologizes for the way she treated him at the funeral. Like everyone else, he was made a victim of William's senseless brutality. Nathan is now invited to share his grief with Shelley Nance's family.
I'm sure Nathan understood.
Absolutely.
You know?
And that's the right thing to do, but I hope she didn't beat herself up about it, because I would have done the same thing. Absolutely. He was a suspect, and he was a viable suspect. It definitely
Absolutely.
Was not, like, you know, some out of left field thing. Mama Cynthia had every right to be in her feelings.
Agreed. Well, in 2010, the Nance family created the Shelley Nance Foundation Memorial Art Scholarship for students from Shelley's high school who want to pursue an education in art. I thought that was really beautiful, because it is taking your pain and making art out of it.
Yeah. And just having her daughter's name live on. So, you know, whenever there is like a foundation or something, Joey and I always try and donate. However, this was the last year that the scholarship was given out. They just said that we're no longer accepting applications or presenting any future scholarships. It's been a long run. We've done a lot of good along the way, but now it's time to put it to an end. Thank you for your support. The last person to receive the scholarship was a young woman by the name of Allison Diaz on Dondre, and she was the last person to receive the Shelley Nance Memorial Scholarship. It was for $1,500, and that's just amazing. And you know, I get it. Everything that goes into running a non-for-profit, it probably served their hearts. And, you know, I looked it up. Mama Cynthia is retired now. And Shelley had two older sisters. You know, she's a grandmother. And so they did a lot of good. But, you know, I was going to go and make a small donation, and they are no longer accepting donations. But congrats for having Shelley's legacy live on in such a beautiful way. I say this all the time. I don't know if I would have the strength.
Same. I don't think I would either.
Yeah.
Now, I know you did some side research.
Oh, baby. Buckle up. In every episode or every show we cover, it's always strange to me the things they decide to omit or change.
Yeah.
Like, it seems so arbitrary. So you know how they kept pressing that it's got to be Nathan or Daniel, Nathan or Daniel? Those are the only two people in the apartment. They had a third roommate. Her name was Allison Morales. And like, Daniel told Allison the story of what happened to Shelley and said, they're probably going to suspect me. I learned this by reading the appeal because, of course, this, you know, guy had an appeal in March of 2013. They held up his conviction. It went nowhere. But I was like, what a weird thing to just omit. I mean, I guess to streamline it because for whatever reason, maybe she was out of town.
Right.
Maybe she was, you know, out of the country. Maybe she was at work, whatever. But it wasn't just the two of them. I just was like, okay, that's weird. Also, another thing that they changed, which I actually think would have made the story really clear, is that Daniel had an allergy to latex. The glove he purchased were these very specific gloves called nitrile gloves, which is like non-latex gloves for people who need to, you know, work with chemicals or use gloves for some reason. So I was like, oh, that shit was really easy to put together because it wasn't just a regular latex glove. This has to be something that's like special ordered. And in my mind, in the show, I was like, also, why did they just randomly go and check Walmart? Well, he told the cops, he was like, yeah, that day I swung by Walmart to get hair dye because the bitch looks old. And they were like, oh, you went to Walmart. Let's pull up that surveillance. I was like, bro, do you have custard in your brains from all that pastry? Why did you? That's so weird. You remember how they randomly were like, so they checked the cameras at Walmart. It's all very strange. Oh, also something they didn't mention. Again, it's just so weird. They said that the blood matched Shelley. The hair matched, too. There was blood and hair. I feel like that, you know, is like a double whammy or whatever. So in the appeal, which I read through this morning, Daniel's team argued that the evidence was insufficient to support his conviction and that he was denied his constitutional rights to his medical records. I don't know. I don't get it. But the prosecution was like really super thin. Okay, I want to just take a couple minutes and tell you about Paul Elsie. He was the investigator on this case. This man was awful.
Okay.
You know how they told us that Nathan and Shelley hadn't even kissed yet?
Yes.
When he was interrogating this poor guy, he was like, really? You haven't kissed her? You've been together 2 months and you haven't even kissed her. You expect me to believe? Like, everybody is different. We don't know if they were religious. They were friends. They were taking it slow. And this poor kid, of course, he's a murder suspect. I get that. But it was just, he was so derogatory to everyone. And he also told Nathan that Shelley broke up with him. That's what made him so mad. He was like, well, you know, Shelley broke up with you. She told everyone she broke up with you. So he was like taunting him, trying to get a reaction. So by saying that, like, he blew up at the cops, he was like, I mean, she told everyone, what, you didn't know she broke up with you? Okay, are you in denial? He was like poking this kid. I would get upset too.
It was really antagonistic for no fucking reason.
And he was doing the same thing to Ashley because, you know, it does make sense to suspect a female perpetrator because there was no sexual assault and Ashley had the keys. It was absolutely right to suspect Ashley. Ashley is telling us this whole story. And again, we always say you can't go by someone's demeanor. And he's like, you don't seem that upset that your roommate's dead. And she's like, I don't know what to tell you. He's like, seems like you're lying. Feels like you should be crying right now. You should be really upset. I'm sorry, Paul Elsie. This man is the worst investigator in terms of like breaking people down. And I get that you have to, but number one, you're dealing with kids. Number two, you don't have any fucking physical evidence.
Right.
So you're taking these people through the ringer on a hunch. And the last person that you suspected, because first they fully thought it was Ashley, then they fully thought it was Nathan, then they were like, what about this Daniel guy? Anyway, I just thought, I don't know if I'm feeling this because I know they were innocent, but he was getting the worst out of people by lying, which, remember, the cops are allowed to do. They are allowed to lie to us. It just didn't seem very fruitful.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, because we want the bad guys to get caught, of course, but also do it the right way.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Anyway, say something funny.
Well, we've learned today that there is an Italy, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a theme song. Did you know that there's also a Paris, Texas?
I did not.
They also have a theme song.
What is it?
Hit it, Rick! Well, I like nothing and I like no one. When I go to the store, I buy a want one. I smoke a cigarette everywhere I go. Thank God I'm a Paris boy. I wear berets and I eat fruit tarts. The Brits call us frogs, but they're the one with what? I may be French, but I like the Johns. Thank God I'm a Paris boy!
Familiar. Fun. Down, bitches. Thank you. We love you so much. Let's all go to Italy, Texas together. The world's biggest caterpillar is there. It's just like a building that looks like a caterpillar. You all, thank you so much for being here. If you want a little more of us, please head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/ithinknot. There's all kinds of goodies there for you. But you know what? You being here, engaging with us on socials, being a part of our Facebook group, which, by the way, join our Facebook group. Also, follow us on Instagram. And we're still on TikTok for the time being, I guess. That's really what feeds us. We love seeing your pictures. We love hearing your stories. We love hearing what parts of the show that you love. So just keep doing that.
We love you very much. We're very glad you're here. We love you so much, baby girl.
Also, check us out on YouTube. If you want to watch our live recordings, you can head over to YouTube, find us at I Think Not Pod, and like, subscribe, follow all the things there. And Parker really does some funny edits on there. So there are some things that you don't get on the main feed, but you get to see them. So go check them out.
And that drops every Friday. So it comes out on The General on Wednesday, Patreon on Thursday, on YouTube on Friday. And we love seeing your comments. So be sure and do the like, the subscribe, the thumb. I don't know. I'm so old. Until next time, I love you, Devinches.
I love you, DBs, and I love you too, Gilly Marie Marsh.
I love you, Joey.
Bye.
Bye.
He's a big old kisser.
And they're like, you've got scratches on your check. You've got I meant to say chest, and I'm back, and I said check. So
that actually makes so much sense. It's weird you've never been formally diagnosed with ADHD, isn't it?
This frock, coat, throat.
Why the frout? It's pretty. Added line for the movie.
I believe it.
Why Ariana Grande?
I know. Okay, let's rein our ADHD in here. Actually, I can do better than that. Just tennis balls through the mouth of heaven and then right out the ass. Have you ever seen that movie? Okay, got it.
Just beep up.